right. Well, tonight we're going to look at the doctrine of sin. The big theological term for this is hamartiology, H-A-M-A-R-T-I-O-L-O-G-Y. Hamartiology, the study of sin or the doctrine of sin, is what we turn our attention to tonight. And so really, for me, my lecture tonight is pretty simple. Look around you. All right, guys, really good time tonight. Good to see you. We'll see y'all next week. In all seriousness, I think the doctrine of sin is the easiest Christian doctrine to defend. I just don't know of anything that makes more sense of the world. In fact, if you take last week's topic, which is the doctrine of man, and this week's topic, which is the doctrine of sin, you hold those two things together, and you hold those in triplicate with the doctrine of God's grace in Christ, the gospel. And essentially, that's why I'm a Christian. That's why I stay Christian, so to speak, intellectually speaking. I'm held by these thoughts because, first of all, I don't make sense. We don't make sense to me without some sort of a creator. Human beings to me just don't make sense. It just doesn't make sense why we would be. I know something besides nothing has to account for me. I don't know why I exist. And second of all, I'm so amazed by the grandeur of man. You ever guys just think about how amazing is what human beings can accomplish? You just think about the beauty of culture and the arts. Whitney and I, a couple weekends ago, were in New York City. We talked about it last week a little bit. But you just think about just all that human beings are capable of accomplishing in one little place like that. You know, just a few square miles. Just the architectural feats, the logistical feat of like public transportation, all the arts and culture that are present there. We went through the Metropolitan Museum of Art, went through the MoMA, and just the art that human beings are capable of creating. You add all that in to just the beauty of how people treat each other often. I mean, I know we tend to focus, and the world tends to put our focus on the negative, and we'll get to that. Trust me, we're talking about sin tonight. We'll get there. But I think before we even talk about sin, it's important to remember just how strange it is that we're good. The altruism of man is a miracle in so many ways. You don't see the sort of self-sacrificial sort of love and things like that present in nature outside mankind. It doesn't make sense why we would value someone who's great sacrificing themselves for someone who's weak. That there's no comparable thought in nature for that. In fact, you are damaging the pack, so to speak, if you are strong and you sacrifice yourself for the weak in nature, in the world. So there are things about mankind and mankind's greatness to me that don't make sense unless we're created in the image of God. There's something beyond being mere animals. And, you know, what is reason? I don't even know. I mean, what is it to be spiritual? I mean, there's something metaphysical at play in the role of human beings, my opinion. So nothing but man being created in the image of God helps me make sense of the high highs of man. But on the flip side, the other thing that's so troubling to me is that man is also so capable of such low lows, right? So you think about something like just logistical accomplishments, right? Just profound logistical accomplishments and how those sorts of logistical accomplishments have been used for the common good. And just beautiful things like evacuation at Dunkirk or something like that. Just something amazing like that. These logistical feats. But then you think about the way logistical accomplishments have been used for evil. So you think about the Holocaust and just the absolute massive undertaking that the Holocaust was. If you've ever read anything about the Holocaust, it's not easy to just kill millions of people and hide it and hide that fact. It's not easy to do. And so the brilliance of the Nazis and their regime and their scheme, coupled with the absolute, obviously, I mean, the most profound example of wickedness we can think of, at least in the modern world. So you see the high highs and the low lows in such stark contrast, even in the modern age. Our ability to build all that we can build, but then also our ability to build weapons of mass destruction, you know, speaking of World War II. So just the high highs make sense in terms of the image of God. And the low lows would make sense if that's all we ever were. right? And if all we ever were, to me, I could maybe find some sort of evolutionary claim that made sense of all highs. And I could maybe find some sort of non-biblical claim that made sense of all lows. To me, last week, what we talked about, the doctrine of man, and this week, what we're talking about, the doctrine of sin, is the only thing I know of that holds together the capability man has of doing and being both. If you ever watch horrible people displayed in media, have you ever noticed one thing that they tend to do? I don't know, if you ever watch a mob movie or something like that, even the most hardened mobsters usually have a soft spot for somebody, right? And they'll often show like the tenderness they have for their family, the love they have for their mother, if you've ever watched a mob movie or something like that, you know? You see those sorts of things happen because part of what they're trying to explore in these sorts of medias are the duality of man. How is it that we can be simultaneously wicked and in some ways righteous? How is it that we can be so different at the same time? Well, to me, nothing makes more sense of that than the doctrine of sin. And then, just to finish this out, I mean, for me, ultimately, then, the beauty of Christianity is the gospel. The gospel simultaneously takes both of these things seriously, right? The goodness of man and the wickedness of man is taken very seriously in the gospel, and both are highlighted appropriately. And the fact that man's created in the image of God is honored, and what man's capable of is honored correctly in the gospel, taken seriously in the gospel. But then obviously also sin is taken seriously in the gospel, and the wickedness of man is taken seriously in the gospel. I know nothing else that holds those these two things in balance. And I feel like it's really perplexing without an explanatory device like the Bible. I can't think of anything that makes sense of those high highs and low lows better. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say? I'm amazed by that. So tonight we will dive in a little deeper into the doctrine of sin. I felt like Grudem's chapter on sin is really helpful in laying a lot of things out. And again, just let me remind you, if you have any questions or thoughts, you feel free to interrupt. But then I'll try to leave some time at the end also, a more formal time for Q&A as well. I'll begin with Grudem's definition of sin. I feel like it's really helpful. Sin is any failure to conform to the moral law of God in act, attitude, or nature. I thought it was a really helpful definition. Sin is any failure to conform to the moral law of God in act, attitude, or nature. So when we talk about what is sin, we think about what it means to act in sin. Now, this is primarily what we think about, right? We primarily think about acts of sin. And you primarily, even beyond that, think about deliberate acts of commission where you deliberately sin. So, I don't know, you know it's a sin to kick puppies, and you kick puppies anyway, you know? And you know it's a sin to lie, and you lie, right? You know it's a sin to steal, so you steal. Those are sins of commission. Then, you add to that, though, another type of sin act is a sin of omission. These are when we fail to do things that God has commanded us to do. This is when we do not do what God has asked. So we omit faithfulness and righteousness. So you know it's right to give generously unto the Lord. And you, through not because of your circumstances or anything else, but just out of sin, choose not to. That's a sin of omission. You know it's right and good when your neighbor needs help and you can help them to give them help, and you just don't. You harden your heart towards your neighbor. That's a sin of omission. So we start thinking about the acts of sin as we define sin. And it's important for us to recognize this as Christians, that this is the sort of thing, I would say too, that needed less definition in the history of the world than it does now. That there are binding moral absolutes on people, and we should not act against them. And these categories are getting more and more muddled over time. And it's becoming more and more important, I think, even for us to explicitly teach our children and those coming up, like, this is wrong. You can't do this. And to give them categories for sin. It's wrong to act against the Lord. And it's wrong to disobey your parents. It's wrong and sinful to do this. Because the moral lines in our culture and society, and really in the world, are getting more and more muddied. And I really think the primary reason for this is just the sort of rise of secular thought since the Enlightenment, where the idea that there are absolute truths, that there is a God, is no longer a commonly held belief. That there is a God who has binding moral requirements of people. And I think even people who claim to believe in God and claim to be Christians have lost a lot more of this than we realize. Just the sense of our createdness, which we've talked about a little bit. So it's important for us as the church to make it really clear that God has moral standards, God has a law, and that we are called to live by for our good and for His glory. Any questions about acts of sin so far? Okay. Second of all, it's also an attitude, which is this is what gets us, right? So this is something Jesus made really clear in the Sermon on the Mount, but it's also clear in the Ten Commandments, that it's also dealing with our heart. So what does this mean? What we tend to do is we tend to sort of sequester off portions of what it means to sin and ignore them so that we can tell ourselves that we're faithful. This is what Pharisees did, right? They would focus on the parts of the law they did good at and that they obeyed well and kind of ignore the others, okay? So this is kind of the... I did this in high school. I was lost in high school and didn't know the Lord, but I was a really good youth group Pharisee in high school. And so I took a lot of pride in the fact I wasn't like a big partier. I wasn't like a party animal because that's the big sin, you know, in high school or whatever. You can't party. You can't be wild or whatever. It's the word, I guess, that was used when I was in high school. And so I wasn't wild, but I was a terrible sinner in lots of other ways, right? And so we didn't party, but...